taking the overall theme of the application of mindfulness and sort of honing in on modulation and fine-tuning. Okay, this next sutta is on from the Anguttara Fours and on calm and insight, samatha vipassana. Then bhikkhus, whoever has gained mental calm but not the higher wisdom of insight, should make an effort to establish the one and attain the other. Then in the future, they will have acquired both, and vice versa. Then bhikkhus, whoever has gained neither mental calm nor higher wisdom of insight into things, should put forth intense desire, effort, exertion, will, vigor, mindfulness, and attention to come to these worthwhile states. Just as bhikkhus, when one's turban or head is on fire, one must put forth intense desire, effort, exertion, will, vigor, mindfulness, and attention to extinguish it. In that same way, should one put forth intense desire, effort, exertion, will, vigor, mindfulness, and attention to come to these worthwhile states. So, bhikkhus, whoever has gained both these things should make an effort to establish these worthy states and furthermore destroy the asava. So, it's clear that effort plays a role in practice. Okay, the next sutta is from Anguttara Fours also, sutta number 170. And this is called The Ways to Arahantship. Thus have I heard. On one occasion, the Venerable Ananda was dwelling at Kosambi in Kosita's monastery. There the Venerable Ananda addressed the monks thus, "Friends." "Yes, friend," the monks replied. Thereupon the Venerable Ananda said, "Friends, whatever monks or nuns declare before me that they have attained the final knowledge of arahantship, all these do so in one of four ways." "What four?" "Here, friends, a monk develops insight preceded by tranquility. While he thus develops insight preceded by tranquility, the path arises in him. He now pursues, develops, and cultivates that path. And while he is doing so, the fetters are abandoned and the underlying tendencies eliminated. Or again, friends, a monk develops tranquility preceded by insight. While he thus develops tranquility preceded by insight, the path arises in him. He now pursues, develops, and cultivates that path. And while he is doing so, the fetters are abandoned and the underlying tendencies eliminated. Or again, friends, a monk develops tranquility and insight joined in pairs. While he thus develops tranquility and insight joined in pairs, the path arises in him. He now pursues, develops, and cultivates that path. And while he is doing so, the fetters are abandoned and the underlying tendencies eliminated. Or again, friends, a monk's mind is seized by agitation caused by higher states of mind. But there comes a time when his mind becomes internally steadied, composed, unified, and concentrated. Then the path arises in him. He now pursues, develops, and cultivates that path. And while he is doing so, the fetters are abandoned and the underlying tendencies eliminated. Friends, whatever monks or nuns declare before me that they have attained the final knowledge of arahantship, all these do so in one of these four ways." So that the first one is sort of the samatha, sort of leading into our insight, our samatha then leading into tranquility. Samatha pubhangamang vipassanang. And say this refers to a meditator who makes tranquility the vehicle of his practice, samatha yanika. That is, one who first develops access concentration, the jhanas or the formless attainments, and then takes up insight meditation. And then the path, which is referred to in all of this, saying, he says, the path arises in him, now pursues, develops, and cultivates that path. And then that the commentary is that, so the path, Magga, is the first supramundane path, that of stream entry. To develop that path, according to the commentary, means to practice for the attainment of the three higher paths. And then the second way of sort of the develops the tranquility, which is preceded by insight. So that is vipassana pubhangamang samatang. This refers to one who is by his natural bent first attains the insight and then, based on insight, produces concentration. And this is one who makes insight the vehicle, vipassana yanika. And the third one, samatha vipassanang yunganandang. In this mode of practice, one enters the first jhana and then, after emerging from it, applies insight to that experience. That is, one sees the five aggregates within the jhana, form, feeling, perception, etc., as impermanent, liable to suffering and non-self. Then one enters the second jhana and contemplates it with insight, applies the same pairwise procedure to the other jhanas as well, until the path of stream entry is realized. And the last one, dhammudaccha vigahitang manasang hoti. According to the commentary, the agitation, uddaccha, in the same as the uddaccha kukuccha, uddaccha meant here is a reaction to the arising of the 10 corruptions of insight, the vipassana upakilesa, when they are wrongly taken as indicating path attainment. So that having the vipassana upakilesas are things like light, tranquility, constant mindfulness, energy, all of the good things, all the things that you are, you know, feel is indicative of and are encouraged mostly, but they're grasped wrongly and are then an upakilesa. So that sort of the agitation arising to the arising of these vipassana upakilesas, when they're wrongly taken as indicating path attainment. And then so it is possible, however, that the agitation caused by higher states of mind is mental distress brought on by eagerness to realize the Dhamma, a state of spiritual anxiety that sometimes can precipitate an instantaneous enlightenment experience. For an example, see the story of Bahiya Daruchirya. That's in the Udana, the story of the Bahiya who was enlightened on when the Buddha was asked to receive teachings on Pindabhat. And the Buddha gave that very brief discourse. So that I've asked many well-known teachers and scholars about this. What does this? What does that mean? Dhammudaccha vigahitang. And everybody you ask gives a different take on it. So it's a curious and interesting phenomenon. No, exactly right. Yeah. No, as I said, it's a curious phenomenon. That again, it's not explained in the suttas, so it's left to the commentators to give a variety of explanations. Yeah.
I'm just curious, Ajahn. This sutta is attributed to Ananda. Is that same progression of five criteria, is that also echoed by the Buddha in other suttas? Because it seems like this is what gives credence to the whole vipassana. At least point number two, the vipassana people say, you see, you can't develop insight first, you don't need samadhi.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, oh yeah, I mean, there are suttas where the Buddha talks about that. I'm not as clear as that, I don't think, but you know, certainly the Buddha's, he talks about, I mean, I can't sort of, it doesn't spring to mind exactly. But, you know, certainly there's discourse with the Buddha talking of the, you know, development of the sort of vipassana aspects. But not in, you know, it's always in very general terms. And the overwhelming guidance that the Buddha gives, of course, is, you know, these go together and they have to rely on, even when you're talking about sort of developing vipassana first, you're still relying on samatha. And that, and then whenever the Buddha is talking about samatha, he's invariably talking about the jhanas. So it's a, I mean, there are possibilities of interpreting in that way, but it's, you know, you also have to take, you can't just take one sutta, and you have to take it into in a context of, okay, what is the general way that the Buddha taught, and what does he teach more often? Well, the anusaya they refer to all the fetters, not just the. I mean, just, you know, as we're sitting here right now, with our anusayas are just ticking along quite well. Thank you. There's not just waiting for the higher fetters to.
Right.
Yeah. So that once the one has accomplished that or purified the stream of consciousness to that degree.
I'm just curious what there's Ajahn said about your question beforehand when you asked him what the before.
Oh, I just I can't, you know, a whole variety of different things. I mean, I can't remember off the top of my head right now, but I've asked different people who are Pali expert, Ajahn Jeff, Tanjukun Thampi Dog, a variety of people. What is striking is it's not consistent as to what the interpretation is. I think it's a curiosity of how, what it's pointing to. Okay, the next one is on the sort of modulation. And refinement of mind. Anguttara 3's 1 Sutta 100. A couple or a few different suttas put together. There are, O monks, gross impurities in gold, such as earth and sand, gravel and grit. Now the goldsmith or his apprentice first pours the gold into a trough and washes, rinses, and cleans it thoroughly. When he has done this, there still remain moderate impurities in the gold, such as fine grit and coarse sand. Then the goldsmith or his apprentice washes, rinses, and cleans it again. When he has done this, there still remain minute impurities in the gold, such as fine and black dust, fine sand and black dust. Now the goldsmith or his apprentice repeats the washing, and thereafter only the gold dust remains. He now pours the gold into a melting pot, smelts it, and melts it together. But he does not yet take it out from the vessel, as the dross has not yet been entirely removed, and the gold is not yet quite pliant, workable, and bright. It is still brittle, and does not yet lend itself easily to molding. But a time comes when the goldsmith or his apprentice repeats the melting thoroughly so that the flaws are entirely removed. The gold is now quite pliant, workable, and bright, and it lends itself easily to molding. Whatever ornament the goldsmith now wishes to make of it, be it a diadem, earrings, a necklace, or a golden chain, the gold can now be used for that purpose. It is similar, monks, with a monk devoted to the training in the higher mind. There are in him gross impurities, namely, bad conduct of body, speech, and mind. Such conduct an earnest, capable monk abandons, dispels, eliminates, and abolishes. When he has abandoned these, there are still impurities of a moderate degree that cling to him, namely, sensual thoughts, thoughts of ill will, and violent thoughts. Such thoughts an earnest, capable monk abandons, dispels, eliminates, and abolishes. When he has abandoned these, there are still some subtle impurities that cling to him, namely, thoughts about his relatives, his home country, and his reputation. Such thoughts an earnest, capable monk abandons, dispels, eliminates, and abolishes. When he has abandoned these, there still remain thoughts about higher mental states experienced in meditation. That concentration is not yet peaceful and sublime. It has not attained to full tranquility, nor has it achieved mental unification. It is maintained by strenuous suppression of the defilements. But there comes a time when his mind becomes inwardly steadied, composed, unified, and concentrated. That concentration is then calm and refined. It has attained to full tranquility and achieved mental unification. It is not maintained by strenuous suppression of the defilements. Then to whatever mental state realizable by direct knowledge, he directs his mind. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, may I wield the various kinds of spiritual power. Having been one, may I become many. Having been many, may I become one. May I appear and vanish, go unhindered through a wall, through a rampart, through a mountain as if through space, dive in and out of the earth as if it were water, walk on water without sinking as if it were earth, travel through the sky like a bird while seated cross-legged, touch and stroke with my hand the moon and sun, so powerful and mighty, exercise mastery with my body even as far as the Brahma world. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, with the divine ear element, which is purified and surpasses the human, may I hear both kinds of sounds, the divine and human, those that are far as well as near. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, may I understand the minds of other beings, of other persons, having encompassed them with my own mind. May I understand a mind with lust as a mind with lust, a mind without lust as a mind without lust, a mind with hatred as a mind with hatred, a mind without hatred as a mind without hatred, a mind with delusion as a mind with delusion, a mind without delusion as a mind without delusion, a contracted mind as contracted, and a distracted mind as distracted, an exalted mind as exalted, and an unexalted mind as unexalted, a surpassable mind as surpassable, and an unsurpassable mind as unsurpassable, a concentrated mind as concentrated, and an unconcentrated mind as unconcentrated, a liberated mind as liberated, and an unliberated mind as unliberated. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, may I recollect my manifold past abodes. That is, one birth, two births, three births, four births, five births, 10 births, 20 births, 30 births, 40 births, 50 births, 100 births, 1,000 births, 100,000 births. Many aeons of world contraction, many aeons of world expansion, many aeons of world contraction and expansion thus. There I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn elsewhere. And there, too, I was so named, of such a clan, with such an appearance, such was my food, such my experience of pleasure and pain, such my lifespan. Passing away from there, I was reborn here. May I thus recollect my manifold past abodes, with their modes and details. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, with the divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, may I see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare on in accordance with their kamma thus. These beings who engaged in misconduct of body, speech, and mind, who reviled the noble ones, held wrong view, and undertook actions based on wrong view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in the plane of misery, in a bad destination, in the lower world, in hell. But these beings who engaged in good conduct of body, speech, and mind, who did not revile the noble ones, who held right view, and undertook action based on right view, with the breakup of the body after death, have been reborn in a good destination in the heavenly world. Thus, with the divine eye which is purified and surpasses the human, may I see beings passing away and being reborn, inferior and superior, beautiful and ugly, fortunate and unfortunate, and understand how beings fare on in accordance with their kamma. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. If he wishes, by the destruction of the taints, may I in this very life enter and dwell in the taintless liberation of mind, liberation by wisdom, realizing it for myself with direct knowledge. He achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge, whenever the necessary conditions obtain. Next one. A monk devoted to the training in the higher mind should from time to time give attention to three items. He should from time to time give attention to the item of concentration, from time to time to the item of energetic effort, from time to time to the item of equanimity. If a monk devoted to the training in the higher mind should give exclusive attention to the item of concentration, it is possible that his mind may fall into indolence. If he should give exclusive attention to the item of energetic effort, it is possible that his mind may fall into restlessness. If he should give exclusive attention to the item of equanimity, it is possible that his mind will not be well concentrated for the destruction of the taints. But if from time to time he gives attention to each of these three items, then his mind will be pliant, workable, lucid, and not unwieldy, and it will be well concentrated for the destruction of the taints. Suppose a goldsmith or his apprentice builds a furnace, lights a fire in its opening, takes the gold with a pair of tongs and puts it into the furnace. From time to time he blows on it. From time to time he sprinkles water on it. From time to time he just looks on. If the goldsmith were to blow on the gold continuously, it might be heated too much. If he continuously sprinkled water on it, it would be cooled. If he were only to look at it, the gold would not come to perfect refinement. But if from time to time the goldsmith attends to each of these three functions, the gold will become pliant, workable, and bright, and it can easily be molded. Whatever ornament the goldsmith wishes to make of it, be it a diadem, earrings, a necklace, or a golden chain, the gold can now be used for that purpose. Similarly, there are those three items to which a monk devoted to the training in the higher mind should give attention from time to time. Namely, the items of concentration, energetic effort, and equanimity. If he gives regular attention to each of them, then his mind will become pliant, workable, lucid, and not unwieldy, and it would be well concentrated for the destruction of the taints. To whatever mental state realizable by direct knowledge he directs his mind, he achieves the capacity of realizing that state by direct knowledge whenever the necessary conditions obtain. They're both very good suttas in sort of refinement and tuning and paying attention to different qualities that one needs to sort of be modulating. So similarly, continuing in this theme of kind of modulation, fine tuning, reflecting on what are the sort of timely and untimely use of different qualities. The suttas from the Sangyutta 46, sutta number 53. Then in the morning, a number of bhikkhus dressed and taking their bowl and robes entered Savatthi for alms. And probably met up with others. They met up with different wanderers of other sects, and then they were unable to engage in a satisfactory discussion with them. Bhikkhus, when wanderers of other sects speak thus, they should be asked, friends, when the mind becomes sluggish, which factors of enlightenment is it untimely to develop on that occasion? And which factors of enlightenment is it timely to develop on that occasion? Then, friends, when the mind becomes excited, which factors of enlightenment is it untimely to develop on that occasion? And which factors of enlightenment is it timely to develop on that occasion? Being asked thus, those wanderers would not be able to reply, and further, they would meet with vexation. For what reason? Because that would not be within their domain. I do not see anyone, bhikkhus, in this world with its devas, Mara, and Brahma, in this generation with its ascetics and Brahmins, its devas and humans, who could satisfy the mind with an answer to these questions, except the Tathagata, or a disciple of the Tathagata, or one who has heard it from them. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes sluggish, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is sluggish, bhikkhus, and it is difficult to arouse it with those things. Suppose, bhikkhus, a man wants to make a small fire flare up. If he throws wet grass, wet cow dung, and wet timber into it, sprays it with water, and scatters soil over it, would he be able to make that small fire flare up? No, venerable sir. So too, bhikkhus, on an occasion when the mind becomes sluggish, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is sluggish, bhikkhus, and it is difficult to arouse it with those things. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes sluggish, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states, dhammavicaya, or investigation of states, the enlightenment factor of energy, and the enlightenment factor of rapture. For what reason? Because the mind is sluggish, bhikkhus, and it is easy to arouse it with those things. Suppose, bhikkhus, a man wants to make a small fire flare up. If he throws dry grass, dry cow dung, and dry timber into it, blows on it, and does not scatter soil over it, would he be able to make that small fire flare up? Yes, venerable sir. So too, bhikkhus, on an occasion when the mind becomes sluggish, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factor of discrimination of states, or investigation of states, the enlightenment factor of energy, and the enlightenment factor of rapture. For what reason? because the mind is sluggish, bhikkhus, and it is easy to arouse it with those things. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes excited, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of investigation of states, the enlightenment factor of energy, and the enlightenment factor of rapture. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, bhikkhus, and it is difficult to calm it down with those things. Suppose, bhikkhus, a man wants to extinguish a great bonfire. If he throws dry grass, dry cow dung, and dry timber into it, blows on it, and does not scatter soil over it, would he be able to extinguish that great bonfire? No, venerable sir. So too, bhikkhus, on an occasion when the mind becomes excited, it is untimely to develop the enlightenment factor of investigation of states, the enlightenment factor of energy, and the enlightenment factor of rapture. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, bhikkhus, and it is difficult to calm it down with those things. On an occasion, bhikkhus, when the mind becomes excited, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, bhikkhus, and it is easy to calm it down with those things. Suppose, bhikkhus, a man wants to extinguish a great bonfire. If he throws wet grass, wet cow dung, and wet timber into it, sprays it with water, and scatters soil over it, would he be able to extinguish that great bonfire? Yes, venerable sir. So too, bhikkhus, on an occasion when the mind becomes excited, it is timely to develop the enlightenment factor of tranquility, the enlightenment factor of concentration, and the enlightenment factor of equanimity. For what reason? Because the mind is excited, bhikkhus, and it is easy to calm it down with those things. But mindfulness, bhikkhus, I say, is always useful. The Samyutta, it's from the Bojanga Samyutta. Yeah, it would have been a good guess. That, so that. Yeah, certainly. Dhamma Vicaya would be, you know, would cover, you know, just about, you know, anything that takes a theme of Dhamma and starts to contemplate it or use it for reflection or bring it up for consideration. Or even just taking the and also, you know, depending how one even contemplates, you know, mindfulness in the sense of, oh yeah, mindfulness is not just sort of mindfulness. The Buddha sort of has these different aspects of mindfulness, of using the in that sense of putting forth effort, having clear comprehension, having relinquishment in it. That's that theme, atapi sampajano satima vinaya loke apichato manasa. So, oh yeah, this is mindfulness has different. So it's like, you know, you're taking something and starting to reflect and investigating on it. And taking impermanence as a theme, okay, yeah. Even if you're using the breath, okay. Dhamma vichaya would also say, oh yeah, there's impermanence of the sensation, there's the impermanence of the feeling that's there, there's the impermanence of the quality of knowing. Oh yeah, right, there's the impermanence on all these different levels. It's sort of Dhamma Vichaya is starting to sort of look at it and investigate it and discern in different ways, and, you know, a bit opening up to a bit deeper experience. you know, as well as taking, you know, all the classical investigations of anicca, dukkha, anatta, five khandhas, paticchasamuppada, you know, all of the above. So it's really picking it up and working with it. Nor even that sense of you know, by taking the object of attention and then sort of saying, well, what's the result of when I pay attention to the breath, what happens to the sensation, what does it feel like, what does it appear like, what are the different, you know, what's the immediate object of attention, what are the sort of subsidiary things that I'm attending to as well. And so you're starting to really to tease things apart a bit and start to investigate them a bit more, take an interest in them. Yeah, because the Dhamma Vicaya is a very important quality for generating the interest in the meditation object as well as in arising of wisdom. I mean, it also facilitates the arising of concentration. Well, both, in the sense that, you know, see, you're just as in this one, where you're. I mean, if you look at it in a linear way, then it's sort of okay. Then I've got to get mindfulness first, and I've got to get the apply effort, and then, or I've got to put my investigation effort, and then if you look at it in a linear way, and then sort of concentration's way at the end. You know, when I get my concentration together and then establish equanimity, then boop, then I'm enlightened. I've got all the enlightenment factors. But as in this sutta, this is a very good example of how these enlightenment factors are being working together in order to cultivate those very factors without the that modulation of the okay, what is, if the mind is excited and restless and not able to settle, you know, what is it that needs to be applied and worked with in order to bring up to a place of settling and stability? Well, what if the mind is kind of sluggish and dull and a bit diffuse? Now, what do I need to apply in order to settle it and bring it to stability as well? So that's all of those factors. So that, like, the concentration is a factor for creating samadhi. That's within the path. So it's sort of part of the path, rather than that you're working with it in order to refine it as well.
So both the function for beginning to end.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, maybe we'll leave it there for today.